Hello and welcome to another Newsmakers Podcast. Today we're sitting down with Elena Burdick-Wellstead, who's the president of EB&L Marketing. We're going to talk about everything a contractor would need to market their business. Hope you enjoy the conversation. Now we're bringing in Elena Burdick-Wellstead, who is the president of EB&L Marketing. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're an author of a new book, Marketing Schmarketing, How to Market Your HVAC Business. So we appreciate you getting on the line here and talking a little bit about marketing with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I'm really excited about it.
Obviously, marketing is an important part of the HVAC business. Also, one that maybe contractors aren't real comfortable with. So let's just kind of start off talking in broad terms about the importance of marketing and any advice you have for contractors who are trying to get their arms around this thing.
Oh, you're so right about that. I definitely see contractors struggling with marketing. It's just not their thing. They can fix a furnace with their hands tied behind their back, right? But mm-hmm. Marketing is a whole different skill set.
So a lot of times when contractors think about marketing, they're thinking about 1,000 different things that people are telling them. Back in the old days, it was just yellow pages. Now it's e-newsletters and social media and that kind of stuff. How do they prioritize what's important for their business and their audience?
Yeah, there's a lot of shiny objects out there that are very distracting, right? They've always got somebody stopping by their office trying to sell them radio, TV, internet services, lot of shiny objects, very easy to get distracted, very easy to get overwhelmed. But really what we try to do is we try to start with goals, because all of marketing should be goal-driven. And when a contractor comes to me and they've kind of been playing what we call marketing whack-a-mole, you just sort of have those different marketing opportunities coming at you. You just taking a swing at them without any goal or without any thought behind it. You're just trying to get on the marketing bandwagon. We always try to take people back to their goals. What are you trying to accomplish? Because when you know that, when you've set your goals, it's much easier to apply marketing strategy to those goals and move you towards achieving them. Marketing isn't really one thing. Marketing is a lot of things working together to help you meet those goals. If there was a silver bullet, I probably wouldn't be on this podcast with you, Kyle.
Right.
I'd be on a beach somewhere.
Sounds good, yeah. How specific should the goals be? Obviously, as any contract would be, make more money. But I'm assuming that's too broad of a goal. I guess how specific should the goals be and how many should they be in order to build your marketing plan around it?
That's a really good question. So when I sit down with a contractor and I start to do a marketing plan with them, I ask them to give me 4 goals, maybe 5, but at least 4. And they should be pretty specific. So, for example, a lot of times I hear, I want more service contracts. Okay, that's a really good goal. But then we go back and we try to make them more specific and give them a timeline. So I want more, 300 more service contracts by the end of this year is a much better goal because you've made it more specific, you've given it a timeline. And when you do that, you make that goal measurable. And anything that you can measure, you can improve. So you should always start with your goals. I want to open a plumbing division. I want more add-on replacement, any types of goal. I want to sell more ductless. I want more service agreements. Those are all great goals. Make them specific, give them a timeline, and then you can apply marketing strategy to those goals.
So and then at that point, you're deciding, if you want this, it makes more sense to do social media. If you want this, it makes more sense to do radio ads. Would that be
exactly
what you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah, that's how you move forward. If you want more service contracts, well, you're probably going to let your existing customers know that you have that service available. You're going to reach out to them first. You're going to make yourself a nice brochure explaining your service contracts, and you're definitely going to promote it on your website because the website isn't something that we just set and forget. your website should be should help you meet your goals. So if you're saying, I want to sell more ductless or I want more service contracts, well, then I better see a nice big ad for both of those things right there front and center on your website.
So is your goal kind of any kind of marketing should drive people to the website, and then from there you're closing the sale, or am I off there?
No, that's a really good point. We kind of look at your website now as like your marketing hub. It's really where your ad kit exists, and it's definitely where you want to drive the traffic. And when you're talking about marketing, HVAC marketing, you want to be able to track everything that you do. And that's another benefit of pushing everything to your website, because you can track where your traffic's coming from and get some really good analytics and use data to help you make good marketing decisions, as opposed to what we used to do in the past, which was just kind of called spray and pray. You would just, you know,
yeah.
You would just send out, you know, 20,000 mailers and cross your fingers.
Right.
But now we have data, so we can be a lot more strategic and use that data to help us make good marketing decisions as we move forward.
Now, is obviously it's a lot easier to measure online advertising versus old print or even radio. Does that make it more important to do because it's easier to measure, or are there different ways to measure the other ones like print and billboards and that sort of thing?
Well, you should measure everything that you possibly can. You can measure print because you can use things like call tracking numbers, which we definitely encourage dealers to do. Anything that you do online, you can track pretty easily. Things like billboards, newspaper, TV, that's all what we call top-of-mind marketing, and that's typically what we do after we've done everything else. So top-of-mind marketing is really for brand awareness. It's very expensive, and we don't typically get a lot of leads from it. And that's not to say you shouldn't do it, but really, if you have a limited budget, you should be spending that budget on lead-generating types of marketing initiatives. It just makes sense, right?
Right, and even the ones they're doing for lead generation, you're also accomplishing the other goal, too, as well, right? I mean, you're already also top of mind in that aspect as well, correct?
Well, anything you can do to keep your name out there is certainly going to help you. In marketing, there's something called the Rule of Sevens. Have you heard of that before?
No, I haven't.
So the Rule of Sevens is that when you're marketing to people who don't know you, that it takes 7 times for them to be exposed to your name or your logo, your brand, before they actually cognitively remember it. There have been all kinds of crazy studies done on this over the years, and it's just one of those advertising industry rules that we go by. So so here's how it works. So, for example, you know, say Mr. Jones is driving through town, and he pulls up next to your van, and your van is wrapped beautifully, and he sees it, but he doesn't, you know, it doesn't make an impression. It makes an impression, but he doesn't remember it.
Right.
And then maybe a couple days later, he's going out for a jog, and he runs by a yard sign that you've put in his neighbor's yard, and he sees it, and it makes an impression, but he doesn't remember it. And then he goes to his kid's Little League game, and you've sponsored the team, so your billboard is out in the outfield, and he sees it, and again, makes an impression, but he doesn't really remember it. And then maybe you send him a postcard, and you know, maybe he drives by your billboard when he's taking his wife out on date night, and all of these impressions start to add up. And then after Mr. Jones has seen it 7 times, you know, maybe he decides, hey, you know, I haven't had my furnace checked in a while. And he goes online, because that's what everybody does. They mm-hmm. go right online. And, you know, up comes your name, but so do 10 other guys. But there's something familiar, something comfortable about your name because he's seen it and it's made those impressions, and he chooses you. So so again, you know, marketing, as I said, it isn't any one thing. It's a whole lot of things working together.
And You were talking about how you have your three or four marketing goals. How often do those change, and like how long is the process? You talk like we want to get more maintenance agreements, so we put that process in place. How long until you see the fruits of your labor, and then how often until maybe you change your marketing plan? Just kind of give me a timeline on most HVAC companies.
Well, I can tell you how we do it.
Yeah.
So once a year, you know, we'll sit down and talk about goals, and then all of our marketing initiatives for that year will be moving towards those goals. And then at the end of the year, you're kind of in the shoulder season anyway. You pull that marketing plan out, you take a look at it, and you know, how did we do with our goals? You've got you've been tracking all of your marketing initiatives, so you can calculate your cost per lead. You can see what's working and what isn't, what's more expensive than others. You know, maybe you allocated money to an online campaign and it's not doing all that well. Maybe your postcard campaign did surprisingly well. So it's definitely, it needs to be on your schedule to look at your marketing plan at least once a year, see if your goals have changed, because often they do, you know, make all of your marketing for the next year moving forward goal-driven.
Do you ever look at it from the different perspective of, obviously, you're talking the goal, we want maintenance agreements or whatever, but marketing based on your audience? Like if a contractor's in an older community, you might market one way. If they're in a community that's maybe is turned over a little bit and it's more younger families, market in a different way. Should I talk about that a little bit, if that in fact is the case?
I think it is the case, and I think, again, you know, you want to be looking at data, because I can't tell you how many times I sit down with a contractor and he'll say, oh, well, all my customers are in their 70s and 80s, so they're still using the phone book, and they don't go online. And then I'll pull up some data and look at the demographics of where they actually are and realize, no, that's not necessarily true. It's just that you are attracting those customers. You know, when we talk about customers who are a little bit older, you know, they don't tend to always be our customers. You
yep.
know, everybody has a life cycle. So,
right.
So we want to make sure that we're marketing to all ages. And you know, we talk about millennials, and they are the largest generation in the United States right now. They have overtaken the baby boomers, and they are a force to be reckoned with. And they communicate much differently than our clients who are in their 60s and 70s and beyond. You know, those folks, the millennial folks, they are more interested in, you know, a really good experience, and they're willing to pay more for it. So when I see some dealers kind of scoff at marketing to millennials, I think, wow, you're really missing out,
right?
Right? And then there are different... So I guess what I would say to cap that is, you know, don't go by what you think you know. Get the data and take a look. You know, you might find that your assumption is not correct. Or you might find that yep, you know your community pretty well. And then, you know, there are definitely different types of products that skew a little bit differently. So, for example, things like ductless. That skews a little bit younger. So we're looking at, you know, a lot of times we're marketing to people in their 40s and 50s because they have the most disposable income and they're at that stage in their life where they're upgrading. But, you know, the ductless just seems to be a little bit younger. We get a little bit more risk with the younger folks. So there's definitely, and things like home automation. Younger folks are definitely interested in that, and that's something I see a lot of HVAC dealers getting into. I would say, you know, there's a lot of places to get demographic data. There's just go online and give it a goog and and see what you can find for actual data on your area where you're trying to market to.
Right. Now, you raise a good point that millennials are obviously, you know, growing in purchasing numbers and have some money burning a hole in their pocket. If I was an HVAC contractor listening to this podcast, what advice? Where would I find the millennials? How do I market to them?
Well, they're online.
Yeah.
They're all online. Definitely. Definitely. And, you know, that's a I'm glad you asked that question because, you know, dealers, some of the dealers who are, I'm going to say my generation, I'm in my 50s now, they're a little resistant to things like social media and putting themselves out there online. And that really needs to change because things have changed drastically. I mean, really, would we have expected 10 years ago how important Facebook would be to the HVAC industry?
Right.
I didn't.
Right.
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 And so what we're seeing a lot of is, you know, we've got second and third generation HVAC contractors who have always, you know, been running fantastically successful businesses, and now they're starting to get their butts kicked by young technicians going out on their own who are really good on social media.
Right. And when you see... I'm sorry, go ahead.
So I was just going to say you can't really rest on those laurels anymore because the younger folks are just going online, checking out the people that they find interesting and working with them. And if you're not online, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, a wonderful second or third generation company with a great customer database and, you know, always, you know, working with integrity. It doesn't matter because the guy who's good on social media is going to get the call.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, we say social media, but within social media is a ton of different options too, is right? I mean, we talked about, you know, Facebook, but that I've read tends to skew a little older. So, should contractors be trying to get on things like Instagram and I'll say Snapchat, but I don't even know what Snapchat is, to be honest. But I know, but I hear that's kind of where millennials are. So it's not maybe the social media that contractors are thinking of. Would that be an accurate statement?
Well, yeah. So, you know, Facebook is still huge, and yes, it does skew a little bit older. And I mean, there's 2.7 billion people on Facebook. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And Instagram is about a billion. And there's a big difference between 1 billion and 2 billion. So
sure.
Instagram
about a billion, I think, if I math correctly. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Wait, nobody said there would be math, Kyle.
That'll be it, yeah.
So Instagram definitely skews a little bit younger. And, you know, that might be the place to do that Douglas promotion or do that. You know, those are going to be more tech-savvy of an audience for you. When people come to Facebook, they really want to see who you are. Are you good guys? Are you somebody they'd want to work with? Are you nice to your employees? Do you do things in the community? Facebook is really about kind of endearing yourself to the community and you know, positioning yourself as a loyal member of the community, and that's really what people wanna see.
Right, it's kind of becoming a person rather than a business, whether it's, you know, put post, you know, introduce your text by showing a picture and maybe a little video, something like that. It's becoming a person rather than a business, right?
Yeah, they definitely want to see that human side of you on Facebook. Yep, for sure.
And maybe it depends on what social media platform you're on, but how many times should people be posting on, like, Facebook or if they have Twitter? We're talking a couple times a week. Is once a day too much? Is there any sweet spot advice you could give?
That's a really good question. And, you know, we could literally do a podcast and talk about Facebook for hours.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing you don't want to do that, though.
Probably not.
Probably not. Yeah, I don't know that I do either. But, and I've completely forgotten what you asked me.
Oh, we're just talking about how many times they should post online, social media, maybe in a given week. You don't want to be overbearing and badger people, but you don't want to be forgotten too, right?
Absolutely. Yes. So the thing with Facebook is you definitely need to be on there, but it's also sort of easy to mess it up.
Yeah.
I don't want to scare people, but, you know, posting too often can be annoying because when you think about it, HVAC is not a particularly sexy industry, and people aren't overly interested in us unless they're in crisis or they're too hot or too cold.
Right.
So it's great to build up your likes and get that community, and you definitely want to do that. But if you're posting five times a day, people are here's what they're going to do. They're going to start hitting unlike and hide this ad, and that is the kiss of death.
Right.
So you have to strike a really nice balance between posting 2 to 3 times a week and posting things that are actually relevant and interesting to the consumer. So, yes, you want to show your text. You know, maybe you have a meeting in the morning, and, you know, you can just take a picture from the back of the room and say, here we are training our techs every day to be better for you, you know.
Right.
And then maybe your next post is an interesting tip about changing your filter or, you know, weather stripping or composting or, you know, something that's interesting to the consumer. So you have to mix it up a little bit. It's really good if it's original content, and I will tell you, and I'll probably get in trouble for this, but there's a lot of manufacturers who are now sort of pushing their dealers and saying, oh, let us do the posting for you. We'll post for you.
Oh.
But who do you think that's helping?
Yeah. It might include a few of their products.
It might.
It just might.
It might, which is okay. I mean, it's okay to post, to repost something that your manufacturer puts out once in a while.
Right.
But when a manufacturer's posting for you, who do you think that's helping, you or the manufacturer?
Right. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, you want original content on there, on your social media.
Just going back, kind of talking marketing in general, how much of their budget should contractors be spending on marketing, or is that a bad question? Does it just depend on the goals, or is there kind of a mainstream, this percent of sales should be reinvested in marketing?
No, that's actually a really good question, Kyle. It's so we always say between 4% and 6% of gross sales, just for moderate growth. If you're looking to really get aggressive this year, you know, really kick it up, or you find that you've gotten to a nice place, but you're on this plateau and you can't get past that 1 million, 2 million mark, well, that's when you want to kick it up. So 4% to 6% for moderate, comfortable growth, 8% to 10% of gross sales for more aggressive growth.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, and I want just to spend the final minute here. I really, really appreciate your time. Talking about the book a little bit, Marketing Schmarketing. Talk about what's in the book, what readers can expect, and why you decided to put pen to paper. Probably not pen to paper. You probably did it on a computer, but still, I like the saying.
I did, but then I printed it out, and there were a lot of red marks on that.
There you go.
Paper,
yeah, absolutely.
When I was done. So I wrote the book because, you know, I'm often on the road teaching marketing classes, which I really enjoy. And, you know, I finish a class and people would be like, oh, that was so great, thank you so much, but how am I going to remember all that, you know? So I also do a lot of speaking, and I noticed that all of my speaker colleagues all had books as well, and I thought, oh, I really need to do that.
Yep.
So, and then the other part of it is for years, I'm a writer by trade, but for years, when I teach a class, I've sort of been picking on the dealers and telling them that I'm going to write a book and call it Stupid Things Men Say to Me on the Road, just for fun.
Yeah.
But it works pretty well because then they sort of behave in class.
There you go.
So that they don't end up in the book. I was actually, I don't know if you're familiar with Weldon Long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dynamic
speaker, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of a rock star in our industry.
Yep.
So Wally and I go back a while, and a couple years ago we were sitting around after we had both been speakers for the day, and I was telling him how I really need to write this book about marketing, but I really want to write a book about all these fun stories from the road, and Wally said, well, why don't you just combine them? Why don't you give some good marketing advice and then tell a tall tale from the road in between? And I thought, that's why he drives a Maserati.
That's right.
And I do not. So that's what I did. I took my formula. When I do marketing consults, I follow this formula. I call it the 7 steps. And, you know, starting with branding, then talking about websites, then talking about existing customers, defining who you want as new customers because you don't want everybody, and then going after those new customers in a strategic way, and then top of mind, and then putting it all together in a plan. So it's kind of this 7-step process. And I use that process whether I'm talking to, you know, a third generation contractor with 40 trucks and 60 technicians, or I'm talking to Chuck in a truck who's trying to get out of his living room.
Right.
It's the same formula, because really the fundamentals of marketing don't change.
Right.
So I'm trying to bring people back to, what are those fundamentals? It's so easy to get distracted by all those shiny objects coming at you all the time. So this book is really just about getting back to those marketing fundamentals, making sure you've got all of your bases covered, and then putting it all together into a strategic marketing plan with goals and a budget. And it's a really easy read. It's only 100 pages. You can read it on your next plane ride. And like I said, just because I'm me and I wanted to have a little fun, I added some really goofy stories from the road.
Oh, nice.
To keep things interesting.
So where can people grab this or order this if they are interested?
You can get it right on Amazon. It's called Marketing Schmarketing, How to Market Your HVAC Business.
All right, perfect. Well, Elena, really great information. Congratulations on the book, and thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Totally my pleasure, Kyle. Thank you so much.